I believe we do have Shauna Madsen and Lewis Gillingham on the line. They were not sure that they'd be able to join us today due to some other things that they've got going on in their office, but we have them on the line. So Shauna and Lewis, I don't know if you're ready to go ahead, but we can certainly have any remarks from you now, and then we'll see if I see John Maniscalco is also on the line from New York. I know he too had some other conflicts and was unsure if he'd be able to be available today. So I'll see if he has any remarks before we open for questions as well. Shauna, are you ready to go?
Yes, I'm here, Stacy, and apologies to everyone. My neighborhood decided to immediately start cutting their grass as soon as this presentation got started. So if there's a bunch of noise in the background, that's what's going on, the pleasure of working from home. So as by means of introduction, I'm Shauna Madsen. I am currently the Deputy Chief of the Fisheries Management Division here at the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. And I will follow the format that my former boss laid out. I was also an assessment scientist for the state of New Jersey and a former ASMFC staff member before that. Also joining me today is what I like to call our resident recreational fishery encyclopedia, Lewis Gillingham. He is the director of the Virginia Saltwater Fishing Tournament Program and the Volunteer Tagging Program. So what we've decided to do today for Virginia is to kind of provide you with a case study of the cobia fishery. Angela kind of opened that up for you, gave you guys a warning that that's what you'd be hearing about from us, unsurprisingly. And we think that the cobia fishery kind of provides an interesting case study for this idea of data and management strategies for recreational fisheries. We kind of just wanted to provide a bit from our perspective here in Virginia. Lewis is doing the part that I like to call the ghost of Christmas past, and he's going to kind of cover the background back when we had an ACL and things like that. And I will be your ghost of Christmas present, and I'll cover the more recent developments. And we're kind of just hoping to cover the evolution of cobia management and the experience that we've had here in Virginia in, you know, having cobia managed using an ACL to now being managed sort of on this 3-year rolling average, and our attempt in Virginia to sort of respond to these changing data and management needs. And with that, I am going to turn it over to Lewis.
How we got to where we are at present. At that time, 2014, cobia in Virginia was subject to the South Atlantic Management Plan, and there was an ACL established already. Recreational anglers were allowed a 2-fish possession limit under the management plan, but for several years earlier, anglers requested the possession limit be reduced to just 1 fish. Their concern was for the resource and that recreational fishermen were selling their catch. 2 50-pound cobia were worth quite a bit of money, and you know, restaurants were willing acceptors. Leading into the 2014 season, cobia fishing was really good, and anglers were adapting to a new fishing strategy. And it was no secret, it was already used in other places, I'm sure, but more closely along the Outer Banks. And that was sight casting or sight fishing for cobia. The availability of fish and sight fishing attracted a lot of new fishermen. And plus it made old fishermen more efficient as they could cover more water and find more fish. In 2014, the ACL for Georgia through New York was vastly exceeded, and the ACL for 2015 was reduced accordingly with projected closure in June. Now, no one was sure exactly what that meant, but for fishermen, they're thinking we're going to lose our fishery. To put it in perspective, the estimated catch for Virginia alone had exceeded the region's ACL. In February 2015, when the final MRIP estimates were published, the public began to realize that the fishery, their fishery for Virginia, was in jeopardy of closing about the time the fish usually arrived in Virginia waters. But the closure was all only mandated for federal waters. But the majority of Virginia's harvest was over 90% of it was in state waters, as was the case for our neighbor, North Carolina. And these two were the two major contributors to the region's harvest. Adopting compatible restrictions in state waters were really left up to the state. And this really set the stage for the eventual transfer of management authority to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. But getting back to 2015, following a numerous public meetings and conference calls, I put South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council, but it was really one of your members who was chair of that council. We came to I call it a negotiated truce between our Virginia anglers, both for hire and the public anglers, our agency, the Virginia Marine Resources Commission, and the South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council. During the process, anglers repeatedly voiced disbelief with the MRIP estimates and demanded they be allowed to provide better and more accurate data. And that really, I set the place for our plate for Shanna. I'm glad I don't have to follow her because I know she's going to knock your socks off. It's all yours, Shanna.
Well, thanks, Lewis. This is a dynamic duo over here. So like Lewis said, in 2015, we had a group of anglers come to us and they kind of wanted to address the perceived issues as they saw them with MRIP. And this group of anglers expressed interest in being able to recreationally self-report cobia to try to further aid us in the monitoring of cobia harvest in Virginia. So our commission heard this, and in 2016, the VMRC actually added cobia to our reporting program. And in doing so, we created a free permit that's required of all of our captains, private boat operators, and shore mode anglers who wish to harvest or possess cobia during the recreational season. And sort of in return for that permit, all permittees are now responsible for reporting their cobia activity during the recreational season. And when we first got this started in 2016, reporting was voluntary. And another thing that it's sort of important to note here is that in order to combat duplicative reporting, permits on a vessel are only required by the captain or the operator, and it's their responsibility to report for all members of their party on that vessel. So for the interim years of 2017 and 2018, our reporting became mandatory. It was no longer voluntary, but we didn't have any consequences in place for noncompliance. So we were trying more of a carrot versus a stick approach. But in 2019, we heard from the community that they prefer to go the stick approach, and we actually approved the addition of compliance language into our regulations. So essentially now the failure to report by the deadline in any one year will result in a loss of eligibility for the permit in the following year, which for 2020 resulted in the revocation of approximately 2,400 cobia permits for this fishing season. And to kind of give you an idea of what that looks like, as of yesterday, I checked and we had about 8,000 cobia permits active in our system, which, to remind you guys, isn't fully representative of the number of anglers, since only the vessel operator is required to have that permit, but it does kind of give you an idea of what our fishing universe looks like. So, you know, theoretically, the vision of a recreational permit with mandatory reporting such as this would be to provide both timely and census level reporting that would allow VMRC to track the harvest in season and to provide an actual total harvest at the end of the season. However, I think, as you know, many of you are well aware, a lot of these volunteer angler survey programs suffer from issues of noncompliance a lack of really a robust statistical methodology, as well as quantifiable ways to actually measure uncertainty in reporting. And therefore, it doesn't quite fully support that very big vision. Since Lewis's timeline, the management of the fishery has moved to ASMFC, and currently the recreational fishery is managed on a state quota soft target. Data such as discard lengths have been approved for use by ASMFC for several similar state volunteer angler surveys, which both Angela and Jeff pointed out earlier. They also have volunteer angler surveys, and that discard length data is really where these volunteer angler surveys shine. But thus far, the utility of the data from these angler surveys have kind of stopped there, and MRIP data are still the standard that everyone is using for setting our recreational management measures. Currently, recreational quota management for cobia through ASMFC has state harvests that are evaluated against the soft targets using rolling averages of the previous 3 years. So essentially what happens is if a state's average exceeds the target, the state has to alter its management measures to achieve the target in the future. And states are also able to liberalize if they are falling consistently below the target for those years. In February of this year, the ASMFC South Atlantic Board specified the annual coastwide quota for cobia to be about 80,000 fish, which Angela brought up earlier. We're moving away from pounds to fish. And that was set for 2020 through 2022. But this year they left in place status quo measures for the recreational fishery. And as a side note, currently that coastwide quota is divided amongst the recreational and commercial sectors, with the recreational sector receiving 92% of the quota. However, there is an addendum exploring this split due to the recently recalibrated MRIP estimates. Actually, tonight, Virginia will be hearing a public hearing from ASMFC looking at this addendum and that split. So for this year, Virginia is using MRIP harvest estimates from 2017 through 2019 to evaluate our management measures to see if we've met our previous soft targets and determine if our measures will need to be altered to achieve the new soft target, which should be about approximately 29,000 fish. Again, that's going to vary depending on that 92-8 split with the coastwide quota. And in order for us to make any sort of required changes to the management measures, we're going to do that through things like season changes, vessel limits, possession and bag limits, minimum size limits. And during this time, MRIP data need to be manipulated and broken down by wave, month, and even daily catch estimates to a point that we recognize that the PSCs are kind of greater than ideal, let's call them that. For instance, I was poking around in our data the other day, and two dates estimates in 2018 in our season, those two dates alone provided 50% of the harvest for that year. So I think that one of the things that I would make the case for is the fact that improved precision on these kind of refined level estimates would greatly improve our ability to manage this fishery, which was sort of what the original vision for our recreational cobia permit program was, something that could help supplement and really drill down on some of these more refined level estimates. So really our bottom line is here, we recognize that our recreational cobia permit program definitely needs an evaluation to kind of assess the utility of the data for future ASMFC stock assessments. And the establishment of management measures, especially given the fact that this program represents a significant amount of staff time to maintain. I mean, imagine 2,400 angry anglers calling you when they don't get a cobia permit in 2020. And kind of thus far, the data collected has sort of failed to meet the goals of getting timely reporting and allowing for in-season tracking. And census level reporting that could actually provide us a true harvest at the end of the season. So, you know, we continue to use MRIP estimates to make management adjustment changes, but obviously recognize that there's a large area of uncertainty around those calculations. As Jeff brought up really well earlier, the augmentation of existing sampling could improve the uncertainty at these more refined levels and also really help to improve the perception of the angling community, which we all recognize is important here. You know, throughout the years, cobia management has definitely evolved to kind of meet the needs of the recreational angling community in the Mid-Atlantic, which seems from a manager's standpoint to be really concerned with setting multi-year recreational management measures, which is something that has been brought up through the council's recreational reform initiative as an issue. It's also a topic that's being discussed by the plan development team, which is currently working on a document for striped bass. And another thing that we've heard is managers is we've heard anglers question whether or not implemented management measures have been given enough time to achieve the desired effect. So there seems to sort of be this drive from the angling community to, there's a lot of nervousness surrounding more in-season management of these recreational fisheries, especially in the for-hire fishery, who don't really like the uncertainty surrounding in-season recreational fisheries management for obvious reasons for a fishery kind of closing down right in the middle of a season when they've got, you know, charters booked out. And kind of just to wrap everything up, I think one of the things that Virginia is really interested in following is the new requirement for private recreational tilefish vessels to hold a federal recreational tilefish permit and to file catch reports. So we are following that with interest to see kind of how those data are used and just sort of glean any lessons learned for our own program. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.